Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 29th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know, it occurred to me last week during our show that I forgot to mention something when I was at Derby Lane. It's actually one of the first times I had a chance to see some of those new table games that they're spreading that are now allowed in these poker rooms.
In Florida. Not new poker table games.
Right, they're new to Florida, right. I mean, they had some of that other stuff, like Queens Up years ago, which bombed, and some other games. But now they've got the Ultimate Hold'em there. They have the Pai Gao. They have the one-card poker, which is, of course, you know, war. That's war. And then they might have had one other one, but it might have just been more Ultimate. It might have been just more Ultimate Hold'em. But I started watching it, and I know that you like to dabble in stuff other than poker when it comes to spreading your entertainment cash. You know, you've done the blackjack and you've done the craps and betting on horses and things like that. So you understand the gambling aspect of things. For me, I've sat there and while I got there early, I like to always get to these events early so I can see where things are going to be, set up, stuff like that. But then I had some time before the actual event began, and I wanted to watch some of it. I was intrigued by it, you know. And they had some stuff going on, and what I mostly watched was the Pai Gao, because, you know, I'm familiar with Pai Gao, and not incredibly, but I understand it. So I watched it, and then there's this one guy sitting in the corner, and he's got all the chips. And then they've got the players who are actually there playing the game. And the guy in the corner is the bank. He's the guy that the third-party company hires to bring in the money and have the game being run. And every hand, he has to give the dealer a white chip for the drop. Mm-hmm. And then what happens, they deal out the Pai Gao. And for those of you who don't know Pai Gao, basically these people are they're basically pushing every hand. I mean, right. Because what they'll do is if they don't have two good hands, they'll load up one really two card hand on top, and then put a smaller hand on the bottom that beats the hand. And then, you know, they'll know that one of those is going to beat one of the dealer's usual hands, and then they split. But a couple of things I wondered, is this, now you tell me, I don't know, but is this game or are these games really worth it for the house? Not the guy, first, and I'm going to get to this too, I don't want you to get past this part, but I'm talking like Derby Lane itself. Is getting $1 a hand worth it? You know, when you play poker, a hand of poker takes almost the same. I was watching this, so the way it takes them to set their hands, some people don't want to set their hands. They let the house set the hand for them. All they want to do is just sit there and watch the money and hope they hit a jackpot hand. But you know, when you're playing regular poker, a lot of those hands take the same amount of time. Obviously, take a little bit longer, but they can take a $5 rake easily from a hand that takes maybe twice as long as a Pai Gao hand. And they'll get five times as much money for a regular poker table being run. But when it's this Pai Gao and these other ones, they're taking $1 a hand. So the first thing I'm asking then, is it worth it for Derby Lane to have this space being taken up by this game and these players there? Are they looking at fringe benefits? What's the reason for them to want to have that in?
The answer is yes. It's totally, definitely worth it to them.
Okay. And is that because this other company provides everything? Do they provide the table and everything too?
Well, it depends on the deal that they have. But one, I would say if I was running a pair mutual, I would be spreading pie. Yeah, because you're right. The game is much slower than a three card poker or Ultimate Hold'em. So
right.
I'll take that out of the equation. But in addition to the rake, the designated player company is also paying the room on top of that.
Okay.
So they're making more money than just off of the.
Okay, good. That was one thing I wasn't aware of. That's why I was asking.
So they get that money. But also, it's a different offering. Right?
Right.
So, you know, one of the things that I've always told people when they've asked, gosh, why are you have so many poker tables in Florida? It's so amazing. You don't go anywhere else, like Mississippi, and the rooms are 16-table rooms. You go to Florida, every room is like 40 or 50 tables, right?
Right.
And what I always tell them is because you can't play anything else here. I mean, we've got a couple of indie casinos, we've got a couple of day cruises. But for the most part, if you are a blackjack player, craps player, slots player, you're playing poker in Florida because that's the only gambling game you can do, right?
Right.
So now that they added these things in, it gets those people who might only play poker a little bit but really prefer to play three-card poker to come in and play all the time. And it's interesting you brought this up because I've talked to a couple people that either run the designated player companies or work for them, and I asked them a lot of questions. Actually, I spent a lot of time with one a couple nights ago asking about this, and they're like, you know, hey, these people come in with a lot more – they're playing a lot more money here because – they might be playing the 2-5 no limit game before, which is the biggest game in the room. But they find that too slow, right?
Right.
You fold and you got to wait 5 minutes for everybody else to finish and go. Here, they'll take that same amount of money that they put on that table and they can play every hand in quick succession. So it's a product that appeals to people and it's much quicker.
Okay.
Also, you know, it also brings in spouses or friends or things like that that don't play poker, which allows the poker player in that relationship to play poker guilt-free, which is good. So, so there's lots of advantages to it.
Okay, now, the bank, the third-party company that's running this business.
Yes.
Now, I assume they make good money because why would they do it? But when I watched, now it's a small sample.
Sure.
But I watched probably between, you know, when the tournament was actually running too and stuff. And I mean, I probably watched a good half an hour or so, maybe 45 minutes of this type of game being dealt. And they did not make as much money as they were paying out while I was watching. There was clearly always being pushed, so they're losing money on those hands. They're losing money on what they pay the house. And then when they finally did win, they would win the money that got bet. But a lot of times, if they got paid out, they'd have to pay out either what was bet or the bonus for making a flush on the bottom or whatever it is. And when I watched, they did not make as much money as they were paying out. And I just thought, you're going five hands against one. I know there's that odds thing in there that makes you have to set the hand and beat both and all the other stuff. But to me, it was like, I just don't know how they're making so much money to make this worth it for them. But they are, right?
Right, but I mean, the odds of the game haven't changed, so that's the reason that every casino offers all these games because the odds are in their favor.
Still in their favor, right?
So it might be a razor thin, as you like, you know, single deck blackjack is almost razor thin, right?
Right.
Or it may not be too thin at all. Like a lot of these games, you know, the house edge is still 3%, 4%, 5%. So they're still going to make on the overall 5%, 3%, whatever it is. In the long term. Now, obviously, they're going to have swings. You know, if you have somebody come in and play big bets and wins, you could have a really bad day as that company.
Right.
Because that's where you make your money, is off of beating everybody at the table, knowing that you have the advantage.
And that's where I came in. Like, I
saw... You got to figure out... you can do the math on how many hands you get and how much money you can expect to win, and then you have to figure in your other... cost, just like any other casino. I mean, obviously, you got to pay the casino to let you in. You know, you've got to pay your employees, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like any other business, but it's easier to figure out. But, yeah, there's going to be, you know, it's not like what we do where we're going to have 1 month where we sell no ads and have to give people $20,000.
Right.
It's never going to happen in our business.
Right.
But it could be in that they could actually lose $20,000 a night. Now, the next night, they could win $40,000 and may back the even. So it's all part of the game. But and then, as long as you're well capitalized, yeah, you're going to do all right.
And I'm glad you brought up the fact that we, you know, have a steady stream of income, and that's not going to – because the two people I do not want to be at that table is the poor guy who is just dealing out the money. He just has to sit there and watch all day. That's all he does. And he goes from you know, if it's his company, then he's going from the Piagao to the Ultimate Hold'em and all that stuff. So he's kind of moving around every once in a while. But basically, he just sits in front of a stack of chips and just keeps bringing those stacks over so the dealer can grab that money and pay people off, yep, or stack that money in his stack, and then he puts it back into the rack. And that's
it's
all he
exciting.
Does all day. And then the other person I don't want to be, and I don't think it's – I don't know. What do you think of this? But the dealers. I feel bad for the dealers.
Yeah, so I asked about this the other day because that was the big thing I did. Because you know, I was talking to the one guy. And he's like, yeah, the dealers don't really like it, but mostly because they're poker dealers being retrained on casino games. You know, if you're a poker dealer, you like dealing poker. It's a different game, right?
Right.
More social and that, so it's a little different. Although, obviously, you're getting skills that help you get a job at a real casino now if you want. So there's that. But my big concern, I'm like, so I asked, you know, is it the tips? And he's like, you know, actually they do all right. Not as great as they do at the table, but, you know, these players, again, we're all talking Florida here, so our listeners from elsewhere are probably wondering why we're so fixated on this. But
right
here in Florida, they said, you know, hey, these players that come over and play these games, most of them are poker players, and they're used to tipping after every hand. So they continue to tip here, even though, you know, you go to a casino and dealers aren't going to get a tip after every win.
See, that was my point, because this table in particular, nobody is tipping at Piagao.
Oh, because they're winning.
Because they're pushing, exactly. They're pushing every hand. So you could deal 20 hands in a row and not make a dime. You could deal one hand of Hold'em and make five bucks.
Yep.
And so as a dealer, all of a sudden you hear this game's coming in, you're going to resent that. You're going to be like, hey, I was making 70 grand a year or whatever, based on getting 20 downs or whatever it is, and now you're taking like 4 or 5 downs from me and making me deal these games where I'm going to make maybe $2 every fifth hand. And I would just be livid to have to force that on me.
But it's no different than dealing tournament downs where you're getting nowhere near what you get in a cash game. So, I mean, it's kind of part of the employment, you know. It's like... you know, you work at an office, but once a week you get bathroom duty. You're the, you know, go in and clean the bathrooms and restock the toilet paper. And you do things that you don't want to do because it's part of the overall job that you have.
Agreed, so. But now they've given you 2 bathroom duties is what I'm saying.
Totally
you know,
agree.
That
totally
sucks.
Agree. But you know what? God bless America. You can go...
Yeah, you can
job
get another job.
Else,
yeah, so, I know. I just felt bad for the guy sitting there just paying out money and the dealers who were making no tips because literally 10 hands in a row push and no one's making any money except the house.
I hear you.
You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was my first experience watching that. I've watched it in real casinos forever. You know, I've seen it and whatever, and I've played
it's
a little bit.
It's definitely different with a designated player.
With a designated player. Yeah, and that was the other thing, too. I didn't understand that. There's the guy in the corner paying all the money, but then there was also this houseway button or whatever it was called. They put it on the cards and... That wasn't what the dealer was spreading. It was another hand.
Is how you set your hand in Piagao if you want the houses.
Yeah, the house is doing it for you, I guess. So some of it was confusing, but for the most part, it was like I just felt bad for some people. I was like, wow.
But no, it's been good for the poker rooms, so don't
good.
Feel bad for them.
That's good. Poker rooms are succeeding. That's what's important.
Well, you got so excited about telling your story that we forgot to mention that I am on a cruise ship right now, so we recorded early. Not only did we record like a week early, we recorded last week's show a couple days early.
Yeah.
So there were, again, 4,000 things in the poker world that have happened since we recorded, so we'll catch up on those next week when I get back on dry land. But before I got on the cruise ship...
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say, we don't know that for sure. You're not truly clairvoyant. There may be nothing happening when you get back, too.
It's about 99%. And it's usually some really big stuff. You know? Like, oh my God, the World Series of Poker folded.
Someone really famous
died.
That
on the show?
How come you guys didn't talk about that famous guy that died?
Well, I would never like to wish death.
No, I'm not wishing it. I'm just saying that's what happens.
No, that's why I went with. Well, I guess I wish death in World Series of Poker. So I guess the same thing. All right, anyhow, so well, people that listen to the show know that I've got a television obsession problem, right? I watch way too much TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, one of our former coworkers at the Times posted a Facebook post this week that got 504 likes, which is amazing.
Wow.
Apparently, ever since he was a kid, he keeps a list of every book he reads that year. So he's got a sheet of notebook paper for every year that he's been alive since he started reading.
Jeez.
Every book. That's pretty cool, right?
That's impressive.
Now, the problem is, I was thinking, I'm like, if I did that, I would have, like, 12 years of nothing on there. 12 years with like one book on there. I just don't read.
I have blanks.
But I watch TV. So a couple things I want to bring up. I finally got caught up on the new Muppets show, and I don't know, have we talked about this, new Muppets? Are you a Muppets fan? I am not.
I don't think we've talked about it, and I'm laughing internally right now.
All right, well, all of us that were, you know, kids, I hated it. I had nothing to do with Disney as a kid, but I loved the Muppets. Every whatever night it was on, I loved the Muppets. And so they brought back the show this year as an adult form of the Muppets.
Right.
So it's you know, kind of a docu kind of show based on, they're all working on this Up Late with Miss Piggy show, like a late night talk show.
Right.
So it's kind of like an office comedy, you know, all the behind the scenes kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
I thought it was great. Now I've had a long back and forth with one of our longtime listeners, Rob Paul Chapman, over in the UK, who hates it.
Good for him.
He took all the fun stuff out of the Muppets, and so anyhow, they've brought in a new showrunner, so the next season's supposed to be completely different. But that's not why I bring it up. The reason I bring it up is that they had a scene on one of the episodes this year where the Muppets were playing poker in the office. Right? They had a little home game.
Yeah, I got you. I know.
So little Muppets sitting around the table playing poker.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So that's funny in its own right, I think, right? But it was even funnier because they have this character that's like the shrimp, and I don't mean like small. He's an actual shrimp.
Uh-huh.
And he had these big Beast headphones on and a hoodie. And sunglasses, and so that was kind of funny too, right? But it got me thinking, because we spent all this time on the show talking about what's going to bring about the next boom in poker, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's TV, because TV really brought about the first boom, right?
Right.
But that was people playing poker and us watching it, right?
Right.
Which we've already talked about, that most of us kind of moved on. We don't find a lot of excitement in that anymore, right?
Right.
So now I'm wondering if the next big TV innovation is in real poker, but it's scripted comedy or drama that doesn't fall back on the tired stereotypes like Tilt did. You know, Tilt was kind of fun to watch just because it was like a car crash. It was just stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if somebody had a comedy, a sitcom that was just a bunch of guys in a home game? The whole show would be them sitting around playing the kind of like Seinfeld, you know, like 5-10 minutes of the show, they'd be at the poker game playing and doing the stuff we do at a home game, and the rest would be, you know, whatever else.
Like Mr. Wonderful says on Shark Tank, I would be a customer, I would watch the show, but I'm out.
But you're out.
But I'm out. Here's the deal. I like the idea, but I don't think it would do any kind of a mini boom or anything. And here's why. And I'm not always negative about these things. I'm just being realistic about generally, the boom questions you always bring up.
You're usually realistically negative.
There's this, you know, American Horror Stories, and there's a different theme every season.
Crime Stories.
Right. Now, so like, because the last one was in a hotel, there isn't going to be a boom for starting hotel businesses.
And people are scared out of their
right. But I just don't see how a show about playing poker is going to make people want to go play poker. But maybe you could. Maybe if it's funny enough.
If it's a scripted comedy, it's not a lot of poker. It's like maybe the first minute or two of the show, they're at a home game, and then at the end of the show, they're back recapping the hijinks that happened the other 20 minutes of the show. I just think that might be something where people are like, you know, hey, it's been a while since I played poker as a home game. It looks fun. I want to have a group of buddies and sit around and talk about stupid stuff and I can be able to play again.
So that's precisely the Seinfeld model. It's a show about nothing, but it opens up with this, in the first two seasons, opens up with his stand-up.
Say, so you had to win an Emmy. I just said it had to get people to play poker.
Yeah, so it's going to do stand-up in the beginning, and then they're going to do a show about nothing, and at the end they're going to do a stand-up to remind you of what it was about. And
professional poker player. I just don't want it to be the tired stereotype. I mean, Tilt was fun to watch just because it was so stupid.
Yeah.
But it's not what we want people to think poker's like.
No,
it's
no.
It's really not. Right?
No, he was like Mendham Master.
Yeah, even if it's a drama, I don't want it to be this down of luck guy that's, you know, smoking crack and, you know, whatever else, you know.
No, you want it to be lighthearted about poker in the sense that it starts with a home game, but also poker, it kind of runs through what they're getting themselves involved in during the week, too. I could see where it could be one of them's a pro and prop bets kind of crazy prop bets happen during the during the episode.
And like an entourage.
How are they going to get their bankroll to get into a tournament with some of the crazy things they have to do and stuff like that? I can see what you're saying. That might be kind of fun. I don't know if it'll start a boom, though. Like, would I watch the show? Of course. I'd watch the show.
No, but it's going to get more people thinking about poker, or even thinking about poker players in a different light. You know, if you do a drama where the protagonist is not a douchebag.
Right.
It's just a good guy that just chosen to play poker for a living, and there's lots of them that have, right?
Right.
And maybe it's almost like a Barry Greenstein thing, you know, where, you know, his goal is to win money at the table and then go out and help some sick kid or something.
Yeah.
Can't hurt, right? As long as poker's in the consciousness of America, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I would definitely watch it and would encourage it to do something like that to get people to think about poker in a different way again and maybe get them back to the table. So, yeah, I don't know if it would, but I would watch. Get on that, would you? Write that show.
All right, I'll start working.
But let's get back to the most important part about this. Here's my problem with the Muppets, all right? Now, not that it's not funny, not that it's not thought out well or whatever, and it's kind of like there's a reason to do animation because there are things in animation that you want to get away with that you can't get away with when you're having live-action people doing those roles, like, you know, The Simpsons and all that.
The arrival after one episode.
Right, exactly. So, animation, I love animation.
That part would be like 40 years old now.
Right, but for Muppets, now, of course, they can all stay the same age because they're Muppets and everything. Right. But my problem with the Muppets is, essentially, there is nothing that these Muppets are doing that humans can't do. Except that one's
Muppets.
A shrimp. I know, but that's what I'm saying. So if you're a child, you get lost in it, in your imagination and whatever. But if you're an adult, you're like, yeah, I'm watching a guy with his hand up the back of a piece of cloth.
I'm sure the Lord does not listen to this episode because she is going to so totally agree with you.
I know. And my problem is not the show. Like, if it was for kids or something, that's one thing. But you're taking, like, 20 roles away from actors who need a job.
Oh, my gosh. Now you're an actor welfare here?
All I'm saying is that if this show is funny enough, because it's funny enough, who needs the guy's hand up the butt of a piece of cloth?
But they're still voicing it.
Right, so let them have actors.
Not getting their face on
I know, but like one guy is probably playing six of those roles. I don't know. But to me, it's just silly to watch. I mean, cartoons are one thing, animation, because they can do stuff you can't do with real people. And storylines that can be followed because it's hilarious and hyperbole. Here, never mind. I mean, I'm glad you like it. Hey, whatever, you gave us a bit to talk about on the show, but man, I couldn't get into it. As soon as they said they were bringing that back, I just thought, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, no Muppets. You could do Muppets. They could, like, you know, read the phone book to me, and I'm like, look, it's a Muppet. It's talking.
God, you're so simple.
Exactly like my wife. Yet again.
Annie updates. It's time for us to build up our bench of possible Annie Up ambassadors. If you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent Annie Up in your home area, apply at annieupmagazine.com/ambassadors. We have an immediate opening in Louisiana, so we'd like to have somebody down there writing for us. Don't forget, we have migrated our Annie Up group discussions over to PokerRadius.com. A great poker networking site. Basic memberships are free and get you access to the Annie Up group discussions, and upgraded memberships get you access to discounts on poker products and automatic entries to contests. Okay, call four. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our buddy Vic G.
Haven't heard from him in 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He keeps the lights on here.
Keeps the float. He says, I just arrived at my local poker room, and I go to the desk to ask for a seat. Another new player walks in right behind me. We both ask for seats in a 1-2 no limit hold'em game. The brush sees that there are 2 seats open at table 1 and 1 seat open at table 2. Should he seat me at table 1 or offer me a choice and seat the player behind me at table 1? If there was no one behind me, then of course I'd have to sit at table 1 to balance the tables. But since there's a second player right behind me, and the brush is aware of the two of us, shouldn't I be given the option rather than the second player? I was there first, so doesn't that count for something?
All right. It says, in a perfect world, you should have been offered your choice of tables. Common sense would figure that since both of you are to be seated, the first player to ask for a 1-2 no-limit hold'em game should have any possible choice. There are variables that might not have been mentioned. Was anybody getting up from the game? Was there table changes to accommodate, leaving none of the new players with any choice? Was one table in action longer, therefore guaranteed to be completely full before the other table becomes full? These questions can go on and on. Next time, just very politely speak up and inquire about this. Hopefully you'll get what you asked for. If not, hopefully you'll get a polite and logical response.
I have a question, though. Mm-hmm. Let's say Vic goes up there and the guy's behind him, and Vic says, oh, I want my choice of which table I want to sit at. And then the guy says, okay, go ahead. And Vic says, okay, I'm going to take table one. The other guy says, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm going to wait for Omaha. Now, the table that needed him at the other table didn't get him. And he, you know what I'm saying? So I think he has to go to – that's just my opinion, but I don't know if it's true. But I think that that's where you –
Well, I think
you
there's a couple things here. Vic is right. I mean, it's a small thing, and I don't think Vic's making a big deal about this, but it's a small thing where a good customer service person, not just in poker, but at Walgreens or anywhere else,
right,
size up the situation and say, hey, here's an opportunity for me to make somebody happy rather than just indiscriminately doing my job, right?
Right.
So I get that. And you're right. You know, if he did that, the other guy could bolt, and then that screws things up. But I think if you got both players there, I think the guy... I think what Vic is trying to say is the guy should have said, hey, all right, so you both want a seat? He's like, all right, well, I've got two seats here, one seat here. You think you were here first. You have a choice on the table you want to go to. Well, I want to go here. All right, good. You go there to that guy. If the other guy bolts, then whatever. You know, it's not tragic to me that right. one table's full and the other one's down two.
Right.
In that scenario, if that's the worst case that comes out of it. The other thing, though, is Elliot's right, is that I think the really good poker staff know what's going on in the room without having to verbalize it to everybody that comes up to the stand, right?
Right.
And we see this a lot on our cruise ships, is that, you know, we've got an idea of what we're trying to accomplish there, or we've already talked to players about moving or this and that. So there are things that we're aware of, or the poker room staff in your local are aware of, that maybe you don't see as a player. It seems obvious to you that this situation, that you should be doing that. But there's a reason that you weren't offered that. And it's not because the poker room manager or the staff person didn't care about you. It just meant that they didn't feel like they needed to explain, here's why we're doing this and all this. And just assume that you'd be fine with it. And if you weren't, then obviously they probably wouldn't explain that to you if you had asked. So, you know, I guess the moral is, you know, as Elliot said, you know, hey, if you don't get your one, you can ask, is there a reason I didn't get a choice?
Right.
As long as you're polite.
Right.
And you can just say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it, I wasn't thinking. Or whatever, or yeah, here's why. And then either way, you're fine, right?
Right, and it's the balance of the tables thing that I was curious about, too. If there's seven at one, and there's eight at another, and you have your choice, and you want to be at one, knowing this guy's going to be able to fill the other one, as soon as you go to the one where there's eight, because you want to play a full table, and then this guy says, oh, I changed my mind, now the other table's going to start yelling, hey.
Well, there's other things, too. I mean, it could be, you know, I'm not a big fan of the must-move rooms, you know, right. Where they have a must-move table. The alternative to that is a room or the main game, the game that's been going. There's kind of like an understood that we'll try to keep this game more full than the other game.
Right.
So, you know, even though there's a seat there, doesn't mean they weren't going to force a player to come over from the other table, but they're going to make sure that that table is as full as possible when people come up. And if the other one goes down to six or five or whatever, that's what happens. So, just depends on what they're trying to do in that room.
Yeah, I agree. I just
again, if you're asking, so that, I guess that's my total takeout from this is if you're in Vic G's situation, be sure you ask rather than just walk away being upset.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you might learn that there's some reason.
Right. Ask politely, and you probably get what you want anyway. So,
excellent.
Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing a bit above our comfort level in a game we don't know too well. $2, $5 pot limit Omaha. We've already lost one buy-in and are down 100 with our second. The table is six-handed and we definitely are one of the more inexperienced pot limit Omaha players. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, it's folded to us on the button with $400 and the ace of hearts... Queen of spades, nine of spades, seven of hearts. We have a suited ace and some semi-connecting cards. A standard raise in this game is 3x, but we account for the limper and make it $20 to go. The big blind raises us to $50. The under-the-gun calls, as do we. Both players have us covered. With 150 in the pot, the flop brings us a nut hand with the 9 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 7 of clubs. The big blind checks, as does the under the gun, and with 150 in the pot, we make it an even 100 to go, leaving us 250 behind. The big blind folds, but the under the gun calls. With 350 in the pot, the turn is the 10 of clubs. The under the gun asks me for a count. We oblige, and after thinking for a while, he announces his bet. 250. So, we have an under full. Are we calling all in? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's hand comes from Andrew. And he says, hopefully I have a hand for you. I guess since it's on the show, it better be a hand, right? I'm playing in a Maryland casino, 1-2 no limit hold'em. I've been sitting at the table for about 2 hours, and I like my seat.
Excellent.
I wonder if it's like a big captain's chair or something like that. Or
very comfortable.
Recliner? Awesome. Imagine if you ever had recliners.
That'd be awesome.
Ed, it's on you. Oh, shoot. It's asleep again.
Hey, wake him up.
Joe, can you wake up, Ed? Oh, geez, Joe's asleep, too. he says, a tight player's all to my left in the under-the-gun big blind or small blind position when I have the button or hijack. The action player's are to my right. I managed to grind my stack up to 240. The average stack is between 150 and 300. A new player has just sat down at the table. In the last two hands he's played, he has been pushing the action, raising and re-raising. I just get up from this table and leave.
Yeah, we just leave like last week because I'm not getting in trouble again. So just leave, Andrew.
You can learn how to play this on TV or somewhere.
Who cares if you like your seat and you've built your stack up to 240? Just get out before you lose it all.
Get out.
It's roughly the same amount as last week, too, that he has. So.
That's true. It's the same situation.
This is not going to be good.
He says he's also been trying to get into an argument with the lady to my right. He states that his first hand was ace-queen after he's beat by ace-king, but didn't show. He's shown down 6-6 for a flop set. That's our read so far.
Okay.
It's a limp pot with five players and me in the big blind with ace-8 offsuit.
Let me just check, and I have to hit it really hard to play it.
Right. All right. He says, normally I would throw this away, but I don't have that option. Wait, technically you do, but it would be a bad
That would be silly, yeah.
I don't like raising as I'll be out of position for the rest of the hand, so I check, and it's 6 of us to the flop, ace of spades, 9 of diamonds, 8 of spades. Ace of spades, 9 of diamonds, 8 of spades.
Okay. This is nice.
Bottom pair.
Yeah, that's nice.
Your first act.
I'm going to bet big here. We got a lot of limpers. We're only trailing, really, ace 9. Somebody could have a set of eights or a set of nines, but basically people aren't usually limping with pocket pairs like nines and certainly aces. So I'm going to think we're probably ahead of most people's ranges here, and I'm going to want to bet big because I don't want anybody hitting that straight because most people do limp with something like 6-7 suited or a jack 10.
It's a very wet board.
It's very wet. So I want to bet big. I want to discourage people from drawing, and if they not discourage them from drawing, but I want to make them pay. So, I don't know. We set the limp pot with a bunch of... So it's probably like, what, 10?
6. So, yeah. So
$12.
And we're first to act, so the spot line must have folded. So 13? If I'm 13?
Yeah. Five, so three. I'm probably going to bet pot here. You know, I might even bet 15 or so just to really, hey, I'm taking this down now. And if you're going to come along with me and you're just going to call, you're going to define your hand too for me. So...
Yeah, I like that big bet because it says two things, I think. One, it makes you sound weaker than you really are.
Yeah,
I mean,
especially
we are
in the big line
here.
Yeah,
but you know, it could be that could be interpreted as an ace jack kind of hand, right? Which is good because we're better than that right now. And we got to get information out of this too. And plus, if you make it 15 to go, now you're making it really hard for draws to
call.
I mean, if they come along, they're making a mistake.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what I'm saying. And the other thing, too, is a lot of times when you bet out on the big blind, they're trying to say you're representing, like, 9-8 there, you know, or a pair of nines or something. You're just trying to steal it, and if somebody has an ace, they might come along now, and you've got them crushed. So, you know, if they have, like, ace 5 or something, So I like to bet. Let's do it. Let's make a bet.
All right. Our hero says, I decide to bet and see if I can take it down. I think checking here is too weak because there are a lot of cards that I don't want to see on the turn and a lot of people behind me. The pot is 13 and I bet 10.
Okay, it's probably the right bet. Our way of playing this one, we want to take a different tack, but that's fine. 10's probably right.
I get three callers before the aforementioned aggro guy raises to 43. You know, here's the other thing about these guys that just gives me the red ass. They bet these weird things. That's my deal.
I know. Don't you have a patent on that?
43? Come on.
Like a medical gown? Yeah, 43. What is that? I think I'll raise him. I think I'll raise him. I'm not going to have this guy raising and hoping to get a free look or take it down now. No, I've got top and bottom pair. Did he really limp with ace 9? Did he really limp with 9-9, 8-8, ace-ace? Probably not. I'm raising him. I'm not going to give him his free shot at the flush.
The profile of this guy is, hey, there's a lot of money in this pot now. I'm going to bet really big, and everybody's going to be scared, and I'm going to take it down with whatever I have.
Yeah, he's probably raising on a draw.
He has a card hand because they do get hands, but I think this is a move.
I think it's a move with a draw. He could have two spades. He could have two spades that make a flush draw two, straight flush draw, all kinds of stuff going on. So, you know, straight draw, whatever. I think that this is still a hand where, hey, if you're going to want to get in on a flush or a straight draw, then we're going to get it in. Because I've got top and bottom, and I really don't think you have me beat here, so I might as well get it in now. So I'm going to raise him again. I'm going to make it like 150 or 130 or something. Really put the hammer down. I'm not going to shove, though. I know I have 240, but I'm going to see if this guy shoves. If he shoves, then I'll reevaluate, but I have a feeling I'm still not going anywhere. Just shoving seems too drastic to me right now.
Right. Okay. His bet makes the pot 96, and I had to call 33. I still don't like my position. I didn't really consider re-raising because I thought he could be doing this with a flush draw, maybe an ace, maybe a combo draw like Jack 10 or Jack 9, in addition to sets and two pairs. However, I want to see how the rest of the callers act, so I call.
No, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. Because now you're giving guys with straight draws the perfect odds to call. Because that's why those other guys probably called, because they probably have something like Jack 10. You really want to get your money in good here, I think. That's how I feel. This guy, if I was ahead of him, which I think I am, I'm going to want to get it in good with him. You know, and if he's on a draw, you want him to be on a draw. You want him to miss his draw because you've got a made hand, and you still have outs even if he hits his draw. You know what I mean? He could hit the nine of spades, or not the nine of spades, but he could hit, you know, a spade here and then get his flush, but then you can pair the board. So I'm just not too worried about a flush draw. That's fine with me. Even straight draw. I mean, those things are fine with me. I want to get my money in good.
Yeah. No, I think we need to get heads up here. So, Hero says, if anyone else calls and a bad turn comes, I'm pretty much done. Oof, I don't like that either.
No, you're already just giving up your money.
Yeah. No one else calls, and it's just us to the turn. All right, so I guess it...
We got lucky there.
Not terrible, then, right?
Right.
Pot has 129 widgets in it. Turn is the 10 of hearts, so our board now is ace of spades, nine of diamonds, eight of spades, 10 of hearts. So the straights do get there. Yeah. And it is on us, I believe.
See, now, I mean, he's put me in a hole here that I have to adjust to now that I would not have been in. I don't know what to do here.
I think we got to remain passive again.
Yeah, right? You got to be passive. Now you got to check call. And it's a guy shoves on you. What are you going to do? Now you got two pair.
Draw here, and we bet now he's just going to love it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
I don't know. Now I'm just going to have to check, I guess, which is terrible. You know, because now he's got position on you, and he can represent anything because you didn't take control of this hand. So I don't like this at all. I hate this 10.
All right, our hero says, I think for a long time I discount ace ace 9-9 and 8-8 because I think he would have raised with him preflop. Also, I have an 8. Jack 10 gets better for him, so do Jack 8, Jack 9, 10-9, and 10-8. While I'm thinking, I look at him and he's staring me down. I interpret this as a weakness, so I put more thought into a flush draw, possibly a two pair now, and I bet 75.
Wow. You know what hand I'm thinking of, and I don't know if it's going to come up or not because I don't know what this hand is, but I was thinking of like Queen Jack of Spades. That's a good hand to limp with if you got a lot of limpers.
Yeah.
You've got the flush draw, which is why you'd stick around a raise, and then you also have the backdoor straight. Now you've gotten there with the gutter for the straight. He didn't even mention Queen Jack at all.
Yeah.
But I'm just throwing that out there. But yeah, that's a crazy bet. What happens?
Our opponent goes all in for 177.
Yeah, I can't fold for $100 now. There's so much money out there. I mean, that's a ton of money.
So I guess it probably wouldn't have changed much had we checked any. I mean, I guess we wouldn't be all in right now, but I can't see us laying down on the river, right? So I don't know.
But if he shoves before, if we didn't bet and he shoves, you can get away from it because you didn't put that 75 out there.
Well, that's true too.
But he's got that 75 out there.
Shove though, right? He's not going to shove if we check.
No, probably not.
Unless he's got nothing, in which case then.
And he's bluffing.
Need to call.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I can fold now, though, since he put 75 out there. I would have gotten it in earlier with him, though.
Yeah, I think I got to call and just hope for the best. I mean, depending on what he has, we still have outs, but it's possible that we're drawing dead.
Yeah. Oof.
But against this kind of guy, I'm not too worried about that. I think if I'm behind, I got an out still, and we've gone this far, so.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're drawing dead to anything. Because, I mean, the only way we're drawing dead is if he has, even if he has ace-9, you know, if he has a straight or whatever, we still can make a boat. If he has ace-9, we can still hit the 8. So I don't think we're drawn dead anywhere. I think we have an out no matter what.
Well, if he does have a set somewhere, then it's probably...
Oh, yeah, if he has a set. But even then, if he has a set, we still hit the ace for bigger aces full. So we have an out.
Oh, that's
unless true. He has ace-ace, which he didn't have ace-ace. There's just no right, way this guy has ace-ace. So.
All right, you're right. Okay.
So we're okay.
All right, so 102 more to us. Our hero says, I still like my flush draw idea with a pair or two. That seems to be in his range since he's been aggressive in the past. I call and he says, don't pair the board, and tables jack seven of spades.
Wow. Oh, there, ooh, that's so close to queen jack of spades, too.
The river is the deuce of spades for a flush he didn't need, and I'm calling for a chip runner with $20 left.
Yeah.
Because I've been on a downswing, so I've been criticizing my game. Obviously, 6-7 and Jack 7 were in his range, even if I wasn't giving them a thought at the time. Does he have enough of those other hands I mentioned in his range to still make this a good call, even though I was wrong? I don't want to be results-oriented. Was the call on the flop really wrong and too timid? It seems dangerous on the board with people behind me who could be sandbagging. Did I bet enough on the flop?
Well, I think we addressed a lot of this. I mean, the fact is that we were passive, and we had essentially what was going to be that we knew was the best hand, and we let the guy get there for his price, not ours. If we had shoved there, he probably still calls. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe Jack 7 says, wow, this guy might have King Queen of Spades here, you know, or King Jack of Spades here, and I might, you know what I mean? Do I really think I'm going to hit a gutter? No. He's going to be pulling for the flush, and he's going to think, I might have a better flush than me, or I have to hit my hand to win now when I've only got 40... you know, or whatever it was, it, I guess it was a $43 bet, whatever. So, I mean, he's only got that much committed. He might let the hand go if you shove on him there or make it a big bet. So, I don't know. I don't know what the outcome would have been.
I don't think this guy's going anywhere with anything. I mean, obviously, we weren't going to race pre-flop, so we couldn't have put any pressure on him then.
Right.
And then when the flop comes, now he's got a gutter with a straight draw, and it's a straight flush draw on top of that. So, These kind of guys like to gamble, and I don't want to say gamble because they're flipping about it. They know what they're doing, but they're going to make those kind of calls and put that kind of pressure on you that more timid players like me aren't. So I don't see them going anywhere with this. So
well, I think you're a little confused a little bit. It's not a straight flush draw. It's just a flush draw. But so I mean,
oh,
it's
I'm
not.
Sorry. Yes,
so
sorry.
I don't know. I don't know if Jack 7 with all he has is a gutter and a flush draw. Does he really call off his entire stack if we shove that flop?
Well, we're not going to shove that flop, are we?
Well, if he bets at 43, when he gets to 43, I'm going to make it like 150, which is essentially shoving him. So if I do that, that's essentially shoving him. It's almost his whole stack.
I mean, maybe, but I...
So does he fold for 150 there?
I think the best odds we have there are 50-50 of him folding there. I think he's probably going to call.
Yeah, maybe. I just think that's still the right play is to make 150.
But I think you and I agree that we should have raised there. So yeah. Whether that would have won the hand for us or not, I don't know.
Right. And we get it all in on a turn anyway, and then you lose anyway. So it's just whether or not he calls.
Really,
that
the goal bet. I was trying to get once he raised there was to get isolated with him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, had we done that, the only way we would have won had he folded his hand. So.
Yeah. And there's no way you put him on a straight draw, gutter hit in there. you know, except for Queen Jack. Queen Jack of Spades is the only hand that I could put him on there where I think the 10 helps him, not Jack 7. There's no way I put him on Jack 7, even if it is a limp pot. So, that's brutal.
Rough one.
Well, I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.